It's the Skinny Podcast, only on Local12.com. Now, here's Richard Skinner, joined by Chad Brendel of BearcatJournal.com and Rick Roaring from MusketeerReport.com.
Hey, welcome into the podcast for this Monday. Of course, Chad Brendel, Rick Roaring alongside as always. I'm Richard Skinner from Local12.com, digital sports columnist and editor, and we're glad you could be with us for another podcast talking a little college basketball with these two Jamokes today. So, actually, kind of a rainy day, kind of a sports-centric weekend. And I'll be the first to admit, because I was in Baltimore covering the Bengals and just got back today, I didn't get a chance to see either game. So I'll get the fill-in from you guys on what both UC and Xavier did over the weekend. We'll talk some Kentucky a little bit as well as they get set tonight to play Arizona State in a neutral setting. And then we'll talk a little national perspective too. But let's start first with you, Rick, and Xavier's win over Northern Iowa. I know just looking at the score, it made my jaw drop a little bit.
Beat them down.
What in the world happened? Beat them down bad. Was it more Xavier or was it More Northern Iowa, not doing things that it needed to do?
I think it's two things. One, it was Xavier's defensive intensity in the first half, especially. I mean, really the whole game, but especially the first half, was unlike I've ever seen it since I've been covering the team. It was just, dudes were on it. I mean, in transition, guys are matching up. They're not losing focus. They're not missing a shooter. I mean, there just really wasn't possessions where they were taken off or guys were losing their assignments or anything like that. They were on, and I think they're starting to figure out how to use their length on the perimeter better. Guys are starting to, you know, those little kind of just subtleties you start to learn as a player when you get used to your teammates, where you can kind of overplay this or overplay
that a little
bit.
Because you know the help will be here, the help will be there, the rotation will be there.
Or because you know, look, we've got 6'6 Edmund Sumner, 6'5 J.P. McCarris, 6'6 Trayvon Blewett, and 6'6 Malcolm Bernard. You just have a lot of length and mobility with your perimeter defense. So I think that helped. And then the other thing is Northern Iowa's personnel just didn't have what it takes to exploit Xavier's weaknesses, and so they really could never just get it going offensively.
Was it a lot of familiarity? Did that affect Northern Iowa at all, you think? Just the fact they played so close to each other, or did they at least get decent enough looks at times?
Yeah, I mean, they played similarly to how they played the first game. I think the difference was the first game, you know, you're not as comfortable with their actions.
Right.
You're playing a little slower on the defensive end. This time, Xavier's like, wait, we already know these guys can't beat us off the dribble. We know the actions they're going to run, so let's really get up in them and give them no breathing room, and that's what they did.
Yeah, very impressive win. So they get them on a neutral, get them at home, and both wins. We'll talk a little bit about Xavier this week coming up. I do want to ask about Kaiser Gates because he was able to play. How did he move? Did he give the minutes they wanted? And will this be a slow progression of minutes for him, or will this be, when time comes, maybe this weekend when they play Baylor, throw him into the mix even more?
Well, that's the most interesting thing about this week, because you do have this North Dakota State game where I think they will probably roll
on Tuesday night,
get a decent lead and be able to work with their lineups and play around a little bit more and figure out kind of where Kaiser fits in at this point, because we know he's going to be a part of this team and a significant part of it, but it's like, right now, how much can he help you, because you're going to Baylor on Saturday and they look like a legit top 10 team.
Very much so.
So much to
Chad Brendel's chagrin after he pointed out Louisville's
I'm the kiss of death.
You
right
are the
now.
Kiss of death, man.
You really are. But Kaiser, in terms of the Northern Iowa game, he came in the first possession. He overhelped a little bit, was late on a closeout, got his doors blown off on a closeout, gave up a layup, then got called for two fouls on the very next possession, was out of the game in less than 2 minutes.
That's a little rust.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
It's a good start.
Came back in, played like 9 minutes in the second half. He had one or two really good defensive possessions where you're like, oh, there it is. That's what he does, moving his feet really well. And then he also had another and one where he kind of got driven and fouled late and looked bad. So
they could have given up something. What you're telling me is that they could have given up in the 30s if it hadn't been for him.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Right. He had three really bad possessions in his short time on the floor. But I think what you wanted to, which is that he was moving well, his feet were there, and his conditioning, you know, it just takes a little bit to get back into game shape.
Well, and you would have to think, with as bad as Northern Iowa was struggling to score the basketball, as soon as they saw him come into the game, they were like, dude just had knee surgery. We got one.
Right, yeah.
Finally got one.
We got a live one.
He was the wounded caribou.
Yep. They always find him. They somehow always find him. So, obviously, but a very good win, a chance to get his feet wet, and that's a good start for him, for sure.
Yeah, well, it was really nice that they had extended that lead, got up by 25, never got back within 15 to where they could play him the second half a little bit and not have to worry about
it. Did our guy, and I haven't even gotten a chance to look at a box, our guy Leighton Schran get a hoist?
No, he didn't get a shot off. I don't even think he got in at the end of the game. I can't remember.
Sometimes wonder about the cigar. Yeah,
we did get Tobler time.
Well, I said on Friday I thought you might get some Zach Tobler time. Speaking of which, UC beat Lipscomb out of the Atlantic Sun. Used to be actually a twice-a-year opponent of Northern Kentucky University when they were in the A-Sun, and they've kind of been a middle-of-the-pack team for years, and they probably are heading that way again.
They're not very good this
Simply
year.
Simply overmatched them, correct?
Yeah, there was UC ran out early. And then Gary Clark went down, and there was probably about a 5-minute lull where you could tell guys, their minds kind of were...
Wandered a little, yeah.
Wandered. I mean, they were up huge at that point, and it was early, you know, still early in the middle of the first half, and kind of, I don't want to say took their foot off the gas, but you could tell that the intensity level was completely different for like a 5 or 6 minute stretch, and then they put their foot back on the gas, and I mean, they took care of them. Lipscomb just... you know, their game plan, and they're a team that wants to shoot 30, 35 threes in a game and see if they can knock down, you know, 12 or 13 of them. They didn't have that type of day. UC did a really good job playing three-point defense. It resulted in, it was kind of disturbing to see the end result was giving up quite a few straight-line drives. And without Gary, you know, Kyle Washington can block some shots, but he's not a rim protector.
Right, right.
You need Gary at the back line of that defense to be the type of guy that protects the rim. There were probably 4 or 5 different instances where Lipscomb just went right past a guard straight to the basket and laid it in with ease that, you know, if you're watching, you're going, these guys got to play Iowa State on Thursday. And if Lipscomb's straight line driving you and putting the ball in the basket, little concern.
But how much of that was simply an intensity and effort?
Intensity some, and it was the game plan some that they were looking to run them off the three-point line. Right. But still, I mean, Monte Morris and Deontay Burton and those guys from Iowa State, if they get even a glimpse of that on tape, because they still shoot the three ball really well, so UC's going to have to do a good job running them off the three-point line, especially Matt Thomas. Burton can knock it down. You know, obviously, Morris isn't a big-time threat from there, but if you give him space, he can knock it down. And they're going to try to straight-line drive you. I mean, they're going to try to attack and score up in the 80s and close to 90 if they can. So just a
or
little...
136 or wherever they scored on some portion.
Citadel runs that Paul Westfall...
The system.
Where they're looking to shoot every 5 seconds, and Iowa State was like, oh, really? You want to do it like that? Let's go!
What, was it 136 they put
on? It was 130 to 64. So, I mean, yeah.
Keep running it. Keep running it for sure. You guys, I know, because I think I saw you tweeted out yesterday, Rick. You got a chance to both watch Iowa State yesterday, I'm assuming. Yeah. I know you tweeted out at least how entertaining the game was with Gonzaga. A game where Iowa State actually was down a good chunk, came back, had a chance late a couple times, I think, to take the lead. But
took some terrible shots at the end of that game.
In watching it, does it make you have more trepidation now about UC going there? I mean, it was going to be tough as it is.
I mean, it's Iowa State at Hilton, so I don't think you look at the game and think this is a game that UC is going to win, and now you don't know if Gary Clark's going to play, and if he does play, what kind of shape he's going to be in. I think he would be the best option to guard Deontay Burton, maybe Jacob Evans, but Burton's probably got, 20, 30 pounds on Jacob Evans. He's a thick dude. Definitely with Gary hurt and the way that they played this weekend, you don't feel you don't look at that. And I think Ken Pom's got Iowa State as a 4-point favorite, which I think sounds about right. You're just not looking at that game going, yeah, that's one Cincinnati's going to go in and win.
Well, that being said, go ahead, Rick.
I was going to say my question coming into this game would have been, which Deontay Burton do you get versus which Gary Clark do you get? Now you probably don't have Gary Clark from what it seems, right? Or you just don't know at this
point? Don't know at this point. Okay. They said, ankle sprain. It's the same ankle, I believe, that he sprained last year.
Mick did not appreciate questions about it.
That was fun.
Did you ask that question?
No, that was Bill.
Oh, okay.
He's got a sprained ankle. I knew somebody was going to ask me the dumb question. I was walking in here, I can't help it. How the hell do I know? He sprained his ankle. I mean, I don't know. It happened an hour ago. I mean, when's he going to play? Whenever his ankle feels better. When's that going to be? I'm not going to know. We're going to have a press conference wins, right? Tuesday. And I won't know Tuesday. I won't know Tuesday. I'm not that smart. I'm not that smart. He turned his ankle. When he's healthy, he'll play. Maybe he won't play before then. How long that's going to take? Gosh, I have no idea.
That was not
had to
me.
Be asked.
I mean, it did. But.
Well, the first question had to be asked. The second question, again, how do you know how serious it is? It just happened. His ankle hasn't even swollen up yet.
There's the potential of a fracture that you would have known about at the time if that was the case.
Or, but, I mean, they usually have a pretty good idea, high, low, hey, he's done for 4 weeks, or this is a thing that's day-to-day type of thing.
But
Mick's never going to say that you've got a big game this week. But I get the question. So, I think the thing with Deontay Burton is when his motor's ticking and when he's going right, he's a very weird player. He's only like 6'6". He's a power forward, basically.
Yeah.
But he has a 6'10 wingspan, which explains a lot of it because he rebounds. He can get to the rim and finish. He'll even shoot threes off the dribble. So
he took one late, right? Didn't he take one that would have given
a big one. And he takes some really bad shots at times, too. He's just kind of an enigmatic player.
Like him and Keelan Martin are similar.
Make Keelan Martin's a lot better. He's a lot more consistent. That's the thing with Deontay Burton is he's not consistent. So which guy do you get if you're UC? I thought with the Lipscomb game, aside from the Gary Clark injury, obviously, the only kind of interesting storyline there was the play of the young guys, obviously.
Yeah, Jared Cumberland, he led them in scoring, right?
Yeah. Right, Jaron led them in scoring, and then Trey Scott ended up playing 29 minutes. What was your kind of takeaway from those two guys?
I mean, you're starting to see Jaron get a little bit more comfortable. I think this is the Jaron that we need to see. He had been, to this point, standing at the three-point line and taking a lot of jumpers.
This was downhill driving.
He got to the line 10 times. He made 8 of 10 free throws. That's the Jaron that can be really efficient for this offense.
No, I mean, watching him, I did a couple of TV games last year when he played for Wilmington, and one game when he decided to get to the rim, he got there. Now, granted, it's high school versus college, but he got there. And then another game, he stood on the three-point line, made his first four, decided that was where he was going to be the rest of the night. He was 5 of 15 from there when it was on. They lost. So, I mean, I think he needs to realize, even at the college level, he's a pretty strong dude.
Well, absolutely. He needs to realize it. But there's this – I think what he has to feel out and what he's trying to get used to is he's not a guy that can get past a lot of people off the dribble. You know what I mean?
He's
not quick enough to beat you off the dribble.
Tank.
So what he has to do is be opportunistic in his and pick his spots to where he has his shoulders ahead of a guy, or where he has, you know, a guy closing out poorly on him or a little out of position. But he has to do it right now. He can't hesitate. He can't wait until the next time. He has to do it every time he has an opening. He has to go to the rim.
He has to watch every tape of Sean Kilpatrick that there is.
Yeah, you talked about that
Sean downhill. As soon as he caught the ball, it was on the floor and he was going. And Jaron has to learn. You know, sometimes he plays too straight up. He played a little bit more downhill. He played a little bit more aggressive in this Lipscomb game. I think that's a good sign for him. And the Trey Scott thing, I mean, we knew that's coming from him. He's going to be energy. He's going to be...
5 assists, 5 blocks.
Yeah. Like, 9 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 blocks in 29 minutes for him. That's, I mean, Lipscomb didn't have any...
Right. It's more than ideal. But it was just interesting to see because we were just talking about, like, hey, do they need to go to a force-out lineup without Trey Scott and just go small with the guys you kind of know? Or do you need to keep working Trey Scott in? And after this game, it's like,
Trey Scott
very
in.
Clearly, I think he needs to try to get more time.
There's not a lot of opportunities for UC in this non-conference schedule to help themselves. There's not going to be a lot of chances. We've talked about this inside the league to help yourself RPI-wise. You've talked about if you want to make some noise in March, it helps by getting the right seed line to help you along the way. I mean, this is close to all eggs in one basket type of game to some degree. It's a big one in that regard because you don't have a lot of other opportunities.
There's only two. I mean, Xavier in January. That's so far away that we're not even. At Iowa State, there's at Butler. And Iowa State is playing really well right now. Butler just knocked off Arizona. So it looked like coming into the season that Cincinnati probably would be a little bit better than those two teams because they had lost a lot of key guys.
Right.
It seems like both of them are starting to already, you know, to get things going. Butler's the weirdest deal, man.
I'm shocked by them.
You look at them and you go, they're not that good. And then they win. It's the Butler way.
It really doesn't make sense when I watch him. I mean, I loved Keelan Martin.
Yeah.
I knew he was going to be good. But even when I watched the rest of their pieces, I just, like, he's good, but he's not that good. He's not – they should be 6-0 good and beating Arizona. And I know Arizona's missing some guys and the team they
expected
to be.
They still got some talent.
But they're still more talented than Butler. It's interesting. I'm shocked by what Butler's done so far.
And I guess this is where it goes back to the whole scheduling thing. When you're looking at it, you can't assume the league was going to all of a sudden – be to this point, could you? I mean, is that part of it when you looked at what you did schedule-wise? Was it just so many young guys?
No, Michigan screwed them.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. That's a good call. Yeah.
For those that don't know, There was a...
Because they had home and home, right?
Well, there was a contract that was signed like 3 years ago when Whit Babcock was the athletic director. UC would go to Michigan and play football in 2017, and then as the return, there was a basketball home and home signed.
Right.
For 2 years, John Beilein never answered the phone. And then this year and next year were the last 2 years of the deal, so they had to schedule the game. So Michigan scheduled it for their finals week, and then 2 weeks later called back and said, oh, darn, that was finals week.
Can't do it.
It's in our bylaws that we can't play during finals, so we can't. Well, maybe we'll get you next year.
Yeah, at that stage, you just tell them to go pound sand, and we'll go somewhere else. But that said, though,
doesn't help you now.
It doesn't help you now at all.
They couldn't find anybody by the time that all went through.
And that's where the unfortunate part of the loss to Rhode Island was. That would have been a good, solid win. And whatever happened against Duke, as long as you didn't get blown out by 35, would have been an okay loss. As opposed to the loss to Rhode Island is not a horrible loss, but it doesn't help you any. And then the win against
Penn State for Duke.
Yeah, right. Doesn't help you any either. So
and now you're in a situation where you lose that close game.
Right.
You're going to Iowa State where you're going to be in another close one where if you lose, everyone's going to be like, great, we're right back in the same position again that we were last year.
Yes.
And really, it could be a completely different team that's much better, but it's kind of the circumstance you're in.
No, they could play very well at Iowa State and lose, could play very well at Butler and lose, and then all of a sudden you're looking up going, all right, now what are you going to do to help yourself because the league's not going to help you?
Yeah, you're in the same spot you were last year, except you hope you don't maybe lose a few of those other conference games that were closer.
Right.
But still, I mean, it's ideally in terms of your NCAA resume and your seeding at the end of the year, you're in a similar spot if you don't win at least one of these next two games.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it makes it tough. On the flip side, though, for Xavier, there's three teams now where this doesn't factor into the RPI, but there are three teams in their league that are in the top 10 in this week's AP poll. Creighton climbed in there today at number 10, Xavier at number 7, and obviously Villanova checks in at number 2. I mean, and Butler sitting there today. I mean, this league is not only is the non-conference going to help Xavier, the league is going to help Xavier a ton.
Yeah, and it's been that way since they joined it. It's only gotten better each year in terms of the strength of the conference schedule. But like you said, actually Nova, Creighton, all legit top 10s and playing like legit top 10 teams right now. And then Butler is also 6-0 and really exceeding my expectations. Georgetown, St. John's have both been worse than expected, I think. Those are kind of the two teams you look at and say they've kind of dropped the ball and hurt the conference a little bit. But then Providence is better than I expected so far. I thought they'd be god-awful, and they're finding a way to hang tough and stay in games and win some good games. So, the conference top to bottom, they're just when you go on the road in the conference, there's not going to be an easy win. I mean, DePaul, you hope. Providence, you hope.
Right.
But how are you going to talk about your team like that?
Yeah, I know. DePaul, I mean, but even they're not playing bad right now. They're playing better, I think, than expected. They're not against good competition, but they're not awful.
Yeah, I'm just looking for about 7 or 8 years down the road when Dave Leto comes back a third time. I think that'll be outstanding. that's the way you hire coaches. Let them go for a while and then bring them back and hope that third time maybe is a charm.
That's love, right?
That is
love. Let them go. If they come back,
they
it's
fly
love.
Back. That's exactly right. They fly right back to the flock, for goodness sakes. I do want to talk about a team, and you and I were talking about before Rick got here today, Chad, and that's UCLA, which probably a lot of people haven't gotten a chance to see. And you asked me, have you seen him? I said, I only saw him in the first half against Portland the other night. I think it was in it used to be the John Wooden Classic. They merged with another tournament, whatever the heck.
Wooden Legacy, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, something like that. Didn't look good for a stretch of that first half, but then when they started to turn it on, it went on quickly. And you look up, and they're in the top 10 all of a sudden, or knocking on the door, and they're in one of the coaches' top 10. Have you gotten a chance to see them, and what do you think?
Oh, yeah. I've actually watched them a lot just because they end up always playing like those late games.
Right. And you're flipping around, and there it is.
Yep. So I've been catching them. I've probably seen 3 or 4 games now. And if you turn that Portland game off early, you missed a great moment of electric television in the second half. Can I play the clip?
Yes, you can.
All right.
I'm going to tell you right now before you see it. UCLA going to win the NCAA championship. You think I'm playing?
You're calling it right here, right now.
Right here and right now. Guaranteed. Come see me when they win it.
That, who that is?
That's strong. Who was that?
That is the father of 5-star point guard Lonzo Ball.
That is fabulous.
Guaranteeing a national championship and the second half of a Portland win on ESPN.
That's outstanding. I did miss that.
So at least you're not dealing with any type of crazy.
This is a wild. I don't know how much you know about the Ball family. It's a wild deal, man. Like, they didn't play AAU. He played with his high school team.
That's it.
Well, they played. He his dad coached.
His dad coached. Yeah, it was
his
a
dad
small
coached a small AAU
but
program.
But nothing national. Nothing on the national circuit.
Right. I mean, they've played some big tournaments because they were really good. Right. He has three sons that are all committed to UCLA that are all likely to be five-star prospects. Two of them are. The third one's a little young, but he will be too.
And he's the shooter.
He's the one that everyone thinks is the best. And I don't know if you saw it. People listening might have seen it, but over the summer, Danny Chow of The Ringer wrote a really interesting article on this.
On the dynamic?
Talked to, well, the dad and just his philosophies. The article was called Be Like Steph. And the idea was that Lonzo Ball's father has had this theory for years that he's been trying to teach his kids to play like the Warriors are now playing, which is fly up and down the court, shoot as many threes as you can, shoot 35, 40 footers. If you're open, that's a good shot. Play off of nothing but ball movement, reaction, and play as fast as you possibly can. And he's been training his kids to play like this since they were youngsters. And then he was helping coach at Chino Hills. They basically ran the head coach out, and he took over the program. His three sons all played last year. They scored they put up all types of records in California, scoring hundreds of points every game pretty much.
I mean, they were up like 120, 130, in high school games.
They'd grab the ball off the backboard for a rebound, turn around, throw a one-arm baseball pass full court to someone cherry-picking down the other and sprinting up.
You know, I will say this. Well, I don't like running up scores on anybody at any level. I'm not a big fan of that. I will say just that style of play. I do like outside-the-box stuff. I mean,
this family is...
I really do.
They've never seen a box.
Ball's dad said...
Of rules.
Ball's dad in that interview said, it's better to shoot a 30-footer with nobody in your face and go through your technique and your form as opposed to shooting right at the three-point line with a hand in your face. Agree, Coach Skinny, or no?
If it's the right kid, yes. Honestly, I had a kid on my AAU team that occasionally, when he had heat check moments going, I would absolutely let him do it. I would let him go ahead and shoot those shots from deep.
What's going on? Do we have a crowd audience right here?
They're located. Hang on. They're located one floor below us. Studio audience. You had no idea about that. They finally just showed up in episode 7.
The roar of the crowd.
Me and Chad were dumbfounded there. That
was a live studio audience.
Oh, it was a live studio audience. One floor below.
Say hi to them. They're always down there. But no, the kid's got to be able to show me that he can consistently make that shot. If he can show me, and I'm not talking he's got to go 10 for 10 or 50 for 50 in practice. If you show me you can consistently make it and you're a shooter, I'm not opposed to it.
Quick rant right here. People get on me a lot because I take shots at the GCL South consistently because they are single-handedly ruining the development of high school basketball.
You and I disagree about that 1,000 times over, but go ahead.
Yeah, but this is exactly why I say that, because your job at the high school level is to develop players and teach them how to play the game. And I know you're going to say
that to
win.
Unless your coach getting paid to win and getting fired because you lost.
I agree. Right. I agree, but I don't think it's that serious at high school. I mean, it may happen that way, but at the end of the day, I still think your job is to teach kids how to play the game of basketball.
I think at the younger level, getting into high school, maybe even the freshman JV level, once you're at the varsity level of high school,
baby.
I think I'm with you. I think you do everything, because no offense, you're proud of that kid that you helped develop and you want him to go on and have success, but you know what that means for you? Doesn't mean a thing, really.
I think that's a terrible way to look at it.
But it doesn't.
That's fine, but that's not your job as a high school educator and coach. You are there to develop kids and mold them into young men. Either way, that's the best thing you can ever do for a kid. If you have a kid that's actually good enough to play at the next level, the best thing you can do is teach that kid how to play the game. And teaching them a system where you don't put them in situations to make decisions and you overcoach, it prohibits
them. I don't disagree with some of that, though. But you also have that kid a lot of times doesn't want to learn your way, which is a hard way, which is doing some little things, knowing how to rotate on defense, all the stuff that college coaches talk about kids aren't ready for. You're teaching that in high school, and 95% of the time, the kid doesn't – he's paying zero attention to that, zero.
Guys that played in the GCL go on and have a lot of success in college. Griffin McKenzie played in the GCL.
That's a great point.
He did.
That's a great point.
There it is, Ryan. Just drop the mic.
I mean, come on, man. You got to come a little stronger than Griffin McKenzie to do a mic drop.
So did Josh Duncan.
Yeah. I think you had come stronger than Griffin McKenzie for a mic drop.
So did Byron Larkin.
I think my main point here is that the best...
So did Bobby Brannon.
Baywatch Bobby honored at the game on Saturday night.
There you go.
The best way to develop players and teach them the game is to let them play fast and force them to make decisions. Overcoaching and limiting possessions and A to B to C to you do this, and then you do this, and then you pass.
You mean coaching?
Does not teach you how to play the game.
But here's the part of that, though, Rick. I mean, if your kids aren't talented enough to match their kids by doing that, what are you going to lose by 40 and have a good time doing that?
No, I'm not saying you have to play this style, but I'm saying, like, it is the best way. You've got to do that to a certain extent. And if you're better than a team, you play faster than them. That's the best way to learn the game.
95% of those kids ain't playing college basketball anyway.
You're right.
I mean, they're just not.
So, screw it. We don't teach them anything.
No. You know me. I'm exactly the opposite. I mean, I'll probably spend an hour and a half practice just doing drills and fundamental stuff instead of working on sets. I'm not a big set guy either. I run five out motion, a little bit of dribble drive, and a couple specialty plays, and that's it. I let kids play. I want them to do the same thing. But I don't think you suddenly, all of a sudden, at the high school level, if you're a varsity head coach, you don't say, oh, you know what, winning be damned, because you know what, my job doesn't depend on it. Because guess what? If you go 8-23, but by golly, you developed a couple of kids along the way, they're going to fire you.
Well, I don't think they're going to fire you. I don't think that's exactly how it works. I think good coaching comes through regardless of your philosophy and how you do it. So we're just teaching kids in different ways. But I think if you go the route the GCL South goes, where you slow it down to that extent and you
overcoach, you can't get shots off. You can't get shots off.
That's not basketball.
Playing defense to the point the opponent can't get a shot off is not basketball?
For a minute 30, there's going to be a shot clock at some point in your life. I mean, like, if you play for a minute 30, no one can guard you. You're going to get a layup eventually. That's not basketball.
Sure it is. It is. We just differ on what we think basketball is.
All right, let's get back to Lonzo Ball.
All right, I was going to say real quick, Bobby Brandon honored at midcourt of the game on Saturday. Gets done, walks off the court. Where does he go?
Strip club?
Straight to the beer guy.
I love it. It's the way it should be.
Straight to the beer guy.
Lonzo Ball.
Yes.
People, media members gushing over him. If you've been on social media.
He's Jeff Goodman crush of the season.
Yeah, they can't get enough of him. The NBA guys are obsessed with him. So is he moving into that number one pick territory? What do you see?
I still don't know that he scores it well enough. Incredible distributor, great feel for the game.
Has helped take pressure off Bryce Alford a ton, you know, and made him.
Bryce Alford's actually becoming the player Bryce Alford should be, a spot-up shooter.
And I'm not a big Bryce Alford guy.
No. I don't know that I would vault him up into that number one discussion. Maybe, like, if this was last year's class, absolutely. I had him right there in that conversation. In this class, top five, I think he could get up in there. I don't know that I'd take him number one, but that offense is so much fun to watch.
I think he's in the argument for at least number one point guard. Now, if there's something else, I think it's likely that a point guard ends up being the number one pick.
Yeah, I think Markel Fultz is the number one pick.
That's the issue. Like, if I'm going number one, I'm still going Markel Fultz because he has a more complete mid-range and scoring arsenal to him. That Lonzo shoots the deep ball really well from deep. He has a weird shot, and he's super athletic. But Markel has everything in between offensively that Alonzo doesn't have. And Markel is passing it at the same high level, making the same great looks. And
by the way, you'd have a weird shot, too, if you were hoisting from 30 feet all the time.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. He's been doing it since he was five, apparently, according to his dad.
That's teaching awful, awful, awful mechanics. Awful.
But all three of his kids are going to be high major.
Because they're probably just absurdly athletic.
He's not a big time athlete.
Lonzo Ball? He's a freak.
He's a good
explosive.
Athlete.
Go watch the lobs they throw to him. He is explosive. That was a horrible.
I'm talking like with the ball in his hands. He's not like
he plays smooth. He doesn't jerk past you.
That's what I'm getting at.
Right. He's not like the Samaje Christie, John Wall, where he's trying to blow by you 100% of the time.
That's not his game.
Teach the game by letting a 5-year-old hoist 30-footers from down by the right hip and never fix it.
Well, come and see him when they win the national championship. Apparently,
I'm going to have to wait for that moment.
Guaranteed.
You're saving that.
You know what's going to be awesome this year?
You're saving that clip too, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
That'll be brought up in the podcast probably once a week.
Yes, it will.
One of the greatest things this entire season is going to be Pac-12 games with Bill Walton calling Lonzo Ball. in that offense.
Maui Jim.
For his school.
He loves Maui.
The Maui Wowie.
I can't get enough of Bill Walton on those games, though. It's still the best.
Oh, I mean, if you've got two just dog teams beating the crap out of each other in a terrible early season tournament.
Insanely entertaining.
He's the only thing that makes it listenable.
He really is. It's insanely entertaining.
I just toked 5 bong hits before I came out for this game. The stars are bright. I can see clear Maui Jim. Maui, I love Maui. Wow.
Blowholes. What could be better?
Tremendous. Tremendous. All right, you got any final takes, Chad Brendel?
I mean, I'm almost scared to go into final takes because I keep jinxing every team I decide to talk about.
Who's your team of the week? Who's your closer of the week?
I'm going to go with Iowa State.
Smart move. Very smart move.
That's the best thing I've heard him say in a while.
That was well played. That was well played.
Got to be impressed with Deontay Burton. He scored 29 on Gonzaga.
Can't stop him.
The one thing I did like is he kept trying to climb Mount Karnowski or what. I mean, he went right at him over and over again.
The most Deontay Burton thing possible.
Yeah. And as Rick knows, one of my favorite point guards in all the time that we've been going on the road and doing – you know, the recruiting coverage is Monte Morris. Great story. You'll love him and Derek Walton that were at Michigan played on Michigan Mustangs. And it felt like every game they were in was close. Every game came down to the wire. They won probably 15 games that we watched at the buzzer. We're watching them in Chicago and the team scores to go down by one. They go down by one with like 4.5 seconds left. Monte Morris gets the ball straight to the rim, lays it up, and they win at the buzzer, and they didn't even celebrate. There was there wasn't even a high five, Skinny.
Really?
He just went over, put his shoes on, like it was the craziest thing.
Like I do this all the time, and we're good.
Yeah, it was like no, we had the ball, and we're only down one.
Yeah, so we're good. We're good.
And we had Monte Morris.
Yeah, we're good. Yeah,
like no one on That's their funny. Team. Like I don't even think they drew anything up. No. I don't think they called a timeout.
He got
it
the
was
ball.
Literally like they inbounded it. He drove the length, finished, and they all just walked to the bench casually.
It's what we do.
Hands.
It's what we do.
It was the most professional thing I've ever seen.
That's
and
funny.
It was an AAU tournament.
There wasn't even a high five.
Not even a
fist bump.
Slap on the butt. No. Nothing.
The parents weren't even yelling. It was literally the weirdest thing. We're like, did they lose? Did they wave that off?
What happened? What just happened? No, they won.
Is the scoreboard right?
But the kid expects to win. He's fantastic. Iowa State, my team of the week.
I love it. That's a well-played card on his part. How about you, Boring?
Brendel's lock of the week is going to be just like the thing that no Division I team wants by the end of the year.
Except he'll go 1-20, whatever the season is, and the one win will be Iowa State.
Yeah.
Just because.
It's a great
just
point.
Because.
And Butler.
I got a team lined up for next week, too.
We'll get Butler in a couple weeks. How about the greatest promotion in Division I college athletics?
Fire away.
I was at BB&T Arena on the campus of Northern Kentucky University.
I'm fascinated by this. You need to tell me more.
So I walk in before the game, and you know, I
this
think
this was the first 1,000 people got something. Is that right?
Yeah, a flag, but that's not the promotion.
Okay.
Wait till you hear this.
It was not the NKU flag that
We're
I was excited about.
We're going to the next
getting.
NKU game with them if this is the case.
So I walk in, and they have that vault thing down. You know,
which you can see people don't. It's a bar, for lack of a better term.
Right. It's just a little thing. They have TVs and stuff set up there. A little lounge area. You go back. You pay
very
for
nice.
Price. Drink. So we go back there. I get a beer before the game, and some guy that I had met in a past life is like, "Hey, me and my buddy are sponsoring free beer at halftime." And I was like, "No, you're not. Like, I don't even know what that means." And so he's like, "Yeah, just come on back down at halftime. It'll be free beers." I'm like, "I'm skeptical, obviously, but
sure.
I'm like, we'll give it a try." So my cousin and I walk back down there at halftime.
Crowded?
And there's just there's only 400 people at the game to begin with. So can't get that crowded. But we come back. There's a full counter of just beers sitting out on the counter, like just lined up.
Oh, so it wasn't like you had to stand there for like a minute 20 pour, and you get like about 3 ounces, and Fred behind you gets 5 ounces.
Skinny. We pounded 6 beers in like 8 minutes. It was walk up, slam a beer, throw it away, walk up, grab, like no line, no nut, like it just go grab a
draft
beer off
cans,
a draft, but Bud Light normal size, like 12 ounces, not even the tiny ones that they give you at Turfway on Dollar Beer Night. And then at the end, it's kind of like, okay, we've been like just snagging beers. We probably need to like get out of here, walk back to our seats. This is kind of embarrassing.
Guys, like, no, drink some more. Like, come on, drink some more.
I know like half the people in this room, considering it's NKU, and literally some lady comes out as everyone's walking out going, "Hey, we had more beers," and she's handing more beers out. So everyone's double fisting as they walk back into the arena, and like the people who weren't back there are looking in their seats like, "What the hell is going on? And why do you all have 2 beers?"
I'm going to go to the next one as long as they have. Are they going to? Is this like
he said? All season
now, for every game.
I'm still skeptical.
All right, the next home game, Wednesday, December 7th. I got a function that night.
Let's podcast from the next home game you both can make.
Actually, this is not a bad one because the Bengals play at night. Sunday, December 18th, 1 o'clock at home against Eastern Washington.
People forget that John Kitna didn't go to Eastern Washington.
There you
go. People don't forget. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
Speaking of AKU, since you touched on them, what happened to them?
Not a good defensive performance
in the
last.
North Carolina Central?
Yeah. Now,
they're actually usually pretty good.
They're not bad. And he does a good job, Lavelle Moten.
No, he's gone, I think.
They had a cat that almost had a triple-double.
We'll let that part out. But, yeah, the North Carolina Central is pretty good. And NKU played terrible defense for, like, the last 5 minutes. But I'm sure people are excited to hear about that.
Yeah, no, I just thought I'd bring that up. Yeah, free beer is the key. You didn't even see the second half, probably.
As I tweeted, NKU lost by 10. It felt like a win to me.
And they only lost by 8, so that'll tell you how where your mind was at that time.
Felt like a win. Felt like a win.
You apparently missed the last garbage bucket.
By the way, Drew McDonald from Newcath, local boy.
Yes.
He's great. He's playing out of his mind.
It's good to see because I know there are people that doubted that, but he was great last year as a freshman and got a chance to have a really nice career, really changed his body and has done a lot of good things.
Yeah.
So.
And he's playing with a giant bruise and like swollen thing on his leg that's like the size of 2 softballs apparently.
That's because somebody who overdrank the beers at halftime threw something and hit him.
Probably.
But it's possible.
It wasn't me. It might have been Mo Egger. He got kicked out of there last year.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
He gets rowdy at those games.
He's unruly.
Yeah.
Very unruly.
Well, the official sounded like the official was a little bit on the chap side.
He's a dinosaur.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right, we'll talk some more next week about why my offense would work and your offense wouldn't work, Rick.
Next week. Friday.
We'll be back Friday.
Go right. Crusaders. Go Bombers.
32-29, man.
Lancers.
Go Lancers. Lancers roll deep.
Lancers 31-26.
31-26. I'm good with it. I'm fine with it. Wins are wins, man. That's all I know.
I'm just glad I covered Northern Kentucky basketball.
All right, we'll be back on Friday to talk about the Iowa State game. Look ahead to a big matchup this weekend for Xavier and much, much more on the podcast. Thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you on Friday. Make sure you see these guys at Bearcat Journal, Musketeer Report, and check me out on local12.com. Have a great week.